applause going. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we have Keith Bolander as our guest. He's in the studio. He's written Voices from the Other Side, an oral history of terrorism against Cuba. Cuba, under second book is Cuba Under Siege, American Policy, the Revolution, and Its People. Welcome to the show, Keith. Good to see you.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks for inviting me back.
Now, you're just back, by the way, from Cuba. You've been there. And
Yeah, I was there 3 weeks ago. The weather was much nicer.
But hey, Canadians can still go. Trump won't let those Americans go.
Right. Well, there has been an effect already. When I was in Havana, you could see the number of Americans were not as great as what they were. Even a year ago, the hotels aren't as full. The private Cuban citizens with the taxi companies and the Casa Particulares, the homes and the restaurants, they're hurting. I mean, Trump's renewed aggression and hostility against Cuba is having an economic impact already. And then the latest is with him ending the suspension of the Title III in Helms-Burton is going to have even a greater negative effect on Cuba's economy. So it's a really bad situation down there. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Starting right on that point, Helms-Burton, this was, and you put the Title III in, it has not been used previous, right?
Never.
All this time we've had, I guess we'll have to ask you, what is Helms-Burton and what is Title III?
Well, Helms-Burton Act was passed in 1996 under the Clinton administration, and it basically set out the regime train strategies that the Americans had against Cuba in writing, including putting in black and white who the Americans would allow to run for any elections or become the leader of Cuba. And one of the aspects was Title III that would have allowed American citizens and companies to sue foreign entities and the Cuban government over confiscated lands, over, you know, the disputed lands that were nationalized and industries. And every American since Clinton had suspended that, because it would have just opened up an incredible amount of international lawsuits, including, you know, British suing American companies for confiscated lands over when the Americans had their revolution.
Uh-oh. And now you bring that up. Now,
so every American...
That's not really nice. It's impolite.
Every American president suspended that aspect of Helms-Burton up until the current American president, Trump, just a few weeks ago, ended the suspension of Title III. So now American citizens and Cuban Americans who are now citizens of the United States can sue foreign companies, including Canadian companies, doing legitimate business in Cuba. So the fallout has already been Carnival Cruise Line has been sued for using the Havana Harbor. And ExxonMobil has sued the Cuban government. So there's already some lawsuits. Now, the legal opinion is they may not go anywhere, but it is creating more uncertainty with any foreign company looking to do business in Cuba. So it really has had an effect.
Yeah, if you have an idea and it you think you might gain some income with the business with Cuba, your investors will say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to be saddled with a lawsuit.
Which is the whole
and
intent.
Even if you tell the investors, oh, I think it's going to be okay, that's really not very, if the guy's risking it a lot.
There's already been some pushback. The Spanish government has set aside, I think, $500 million in order to compensate companies that are trapped, you know, that are being sued. And the Canadian government has made noise about doing the same sort of thing, but you know, there's nothing to stop anyone from suing in American courts, and it can take years for it to be resolved, if it even is resolved. And again, as you were commenting, it just, you know, puts a damper on anyone who's looking to do business in Cuba.
Yeah, you know, when you came in, we were talking about this issue, the increasing, what our problem is, we have a weak government here. And, you know, the Americans might, well, the expression is, smell blood. I mean, under Pierre Trudeau, that was an ancient Canadian history, there was a man, he actually developed a kind of a friendly, understanding relationship, actually on a personal basis, with the Cuban leadership and Fidel himself. And Canadians were rather proud of that. That was a little shining medal. That was Canada had a different approach to Cuba. But now all these years have gone by. Pierre's long gone. And the U.S., what they're saying, it could actually put in jeopardy that the relationship Canada has with Cuba.
Yeah, the Canadians still send the most tourists of any country to Cuba, so we'll still go to Cuba for the cheap holidays. But there has been some effect on the relationship between Cuba and Canada. And just this last week, the Canadian embassy in Havana, which is down 50% of its personnel, just announced that they would no longer process visa applications for individual Cubans wanting to visit Canada, because that stems from the sonic attack incidents where there were some diplomats in the United States embassy and some diplomats in the Canadian embassy were supposedly being affected by these odd sounds. No one knows where they're coming from. No
the
one is
red
blamed.
Dr. Strangelove. It is who so. Thought, I will give them crickets and drive them crazy.
Well,
and they didn't know how to stop him because whoever knew that crickets could do that.
The theories have been just remarkable, including certain bugs, insects from Cuba making the sounds, or the Russians have the technology to specifically target an individual and put ringing in his ears and have brain damage. So it's been just a bizarre situation.
Which, of course, would be a very smart foreign policy move.
I could target a few people. Right?
What would be a really bright idea? Yeah.
So there's been fallout. The American embassy recalled half of their staff, and the Canadians did too. And now individual Cubans have to go to a third country to get a visa to come to Canada, which is almost impossible for them. So there has been a disruption diplomatically on a bilateral level, but it's not stopping the tourists from coming, and that's probably more important than how the governments react to one another.
It's an act now of political heroism, and it's also a good time to go to Cuba, and you don't have a bunch of Yankees there.
I get a lot of Canadians
in the South.
A lot of Canadians complain, if the Americans come to Cuba, they won't go. I say, hey, the country's big enough for both.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to solve this, but I don't see political voices, except in the U.S. There are some pretty loud voices in the American Congress, who are unhappy with this. Here, it seems to me, it's rather quiet. It's a worrying thing. Now, I should remind everybody, you have written outstanding books on Cuba, and one of them is titled The Siege. And the last time we spoke to you, we were entertaining the possibility that the siege was coming to an end, that we had this really kind of interesting photograph of Raul Castro holding Obama's hand in the air, except Obama went limp, which took the fun out of it. But we really thought, and the Cuban Five were removed from U.S. territory. They made it home. They're with their families. It looks to me like they just got across the bridge before it caught fire.
It seems such a long time ago. It was 2014 when the new opening began, and there was immediate and really deep economic benefits for both sides. Mm-hmm. The Americans were allowed to come in. The Carnival Cruise Line and other American companies started doing business legally in Cuba. And American tourists were coming in great numbers, mostly into Havana. And so there was a real sense of optimism on the Cuban individual side and the Cuban government side. And there seemed to be a sense of accepting the move towards normalcy on the American
yes.
side. Well, that changed with the current president. And again, my opinion is he's not the mastermind. He's the puppet. There's puppet masters behind him, like John Bolton, Elliot Abrams.
He's not the madman.
He's not.
Appears.
Yeah.
He's the puppet of a madman that doesn't appear.
They've convinced him that it's politically expedient to have this hard line against Cuba and Venezuela.
Yes.
For the voters in Florida. There's still a tremendous amount of influence the hard right first generation Cuban Americans have in Florida. It's diminishing because demographics in a few years will diminish their influence even more. But Trump has been convinced by these absolute hard right neocons that this is the policy he should take.
Yeah, it is. the it's very hard to get a handle on. In you mentioned is Florida, and what's the name of that congressman? Rubio.
Marco Rubio.
Rubio.
Diaz Ballard.
He has all the files. He has the Venezuela file. He has the Cuba file.
And if you remember during
he's a Cubaphobe.
And during the presidential nomination process on the Republican side, Trump did not have much liking for Marco.
Well,
Marco
he made fun of it. He said, "Oh, little Mario, who interrupts his speech by grabbing a bottle and pouring it on his head." Yeah,
exactly. And now they're best buddies. It's just so politics, but it's so hypocritical.
Cuba is being drawn into the Venezuela matter. And in a most absurd fashion, I probably shouldn't put words in your mouth, but it seems to me absurd, with Bolton and Pompeo, all brilliant men, of course, saying that the Cubans are masterminding the military side for Venezuela and that they have special, soldiers there. Can you talk about what soldiers?
Yeah, that's the charge that Elliot Abrams has made as well, that there was 20,000 Cuban military controlling the Venezuelan military and the government, and that number just happened to be the same amount of Cuban doctors that are in Venezuela. So then a few weeks later, he revised it. Now there's like 5,000 Cuban military advisors controlling the Venezuelan government and the military. I've never seen any proof of it. And then there was, Maduro's bodyguards are supposed to be all Cubans as well. So,
and yet nobody's seen that either.
Well, this is just one of the justifications, not only to promote the illegal military coup against Venezuela, but to justify the increased hostility against Cuba. The whole, Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, the triumvirate of evil. How Nicaragua gets brought into this, I don't know. No one talks about them anymore. So the focus is Venezuela and Cuba.
The politicians call it name recognition.
Yeah.
Say, oh, yeah, Ortega, I hate that.
and again, because of the strong economic relationship between Venezuela and Cuba, the American, the Trump administration sees, I guess, an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone, but neither will succeed. So.
Yeah. Now, this is Keith Bolander we're speaking to, and in Voices from the Other Side, one of the things you documented and brought out, and of course, through the poignancy of personal stories, was Cuban victims of sabotage. And I wonder, do Cubans sort of notice an echo in what is happening in Venezuela with power outages and odd developments? I mean, this is, again, part of the American playbook, right?
That's a really good point. It's right out of the American playbook from the 60s, when the height of the aggression, physical, direct violence against Cuba was really manifested by the American government. So the economic embargo, the propaganda, the naming of the Venezuelan government, the current Venezuelan government, as illegitimate, this is all the same sort of strategies that the Americans used against Cuba. Now, there hasn't been the same, as far as I understand, the same level of terrorism against the Venezuelan citizenship as there was against the Cubans citizens in the early 60s, but
it's
options are on the table, as Trump said.
Knocking out power structures is a kind of a suggestion. And also, when they start talking, as the U.S. has always done too about Cuba, the U.S. has never taken further military action, Bay of Pigs, off the table. My memory of once being there was looking out. I was at the Riviera Hotel, and I was standing in Malecón. And I said, what is that ship? It's always there. And I said, that's an American ship. It's a destroyer or something. I don't know. It probably still sitting here.
It could be, yeah. The main aspect is the propaganda. It's just incredible, how the corporate media has fallen completely in line.
Obedient dog, aren't they? I mean,
not just the Americans, but the European and the Canadian media has been extremely consistent. And that's actually, just to give myself a little plug, the topic of my third book that's coming out this fall is how the corporate media has covered the Cuban Revolution, and not just American media, well, but Canadian media and European media.
Let's underline that. Keith Bolander has a new book coming out. When will it be out?
In November. It's being published by Pluto Press in London.
Pluto Press has a good publisher. Yeah.
They published my first one, so I'm happy to have them back.
And the title, roughly, do you have a working title?
Yeah,
or do you have a title?
The title is Manufacturing the Enemy, Corporate Media War Against Cuba.
Uh-huh. Well, now I'm going to really get the listeners' attention here for Keith Bolander, but I'm going to say there's something with the baseball going on that I don't understand. What is this?
Well, that's a
Major League Baseball?
Yeah, there's an excellent point of how
I thought we loved those guys, and you're welcome. And boy, oh boy, we got Puig and these other guys who can all play.
Well, for years, the Cuban baseball players would, you know, as the Americans would describe them, they would defect from Cuba and come and play in the American leagues. And up until the last couple of years, the Cuban government was you know, hesitant to welcome these Cuban players back. They are now, and so there's no problems with Cuban baseball players still having to go through, you know, private individuals to take them into the United States, you know, under the current immigration laws. Well, then Major League Baseball and the Cuban Baseball Federation came to an agreement about 3 or 4 months ago, allowing Cuban baseball players to legally leave the country, play for the Major League Baseball under the same sort of rules that Japanese players and South American players. So it's not a draft, but they have a mechanism to allow these international players to come play for the Major League Baseball. So the purpose was to eliminate the human smuggling of these Cuban baseball players into the United States. So it was working well for both sides. Contracts
take the crime out of it, and contracts, a lot of ugly things happen.
Yeah, contracts were agreed to. The Cuban government would receive a percentage of the Cuban baseball player salary, as do the Japanese baseball federations, as do the Venezuelan.
Very important point.
Exactly the same. So the agreement was made, both sides agreed to it, and Trump came in and arbitrarily canceled it.
Yeah, so now, I guess, can you kind of project what that means now for the next round of drafted balls? Because, you know, they do draft those Cuban players.
Well, this is the hypocrisy of the policy and how the media picks it up, because the agreement was to eliminate the human smuggling aspect of getting Cuban players out of the country into the United States.
Yeah, they gave half their bonus to crooks.
Right. So now Marco Rubio said, I support Trump's canceling the agreement, because it'll end human smuggling of Cuban baseball. In fact, it'll just go back to the same
way.
It's just completely opposite. It's like, it's bizarro world.
Well, by the way, does Helms-Burton, is that a factor in this? In other words, if they go ahead with the agreement they have, that'll be called a violation, right?
Well, they had to make an agreement.
I decided not to take the call.
Under the Helms-Burton, there was an exception, however they arranged it, but there was an exception under the Helms-Burton to allow, you know, a financial aspect coming back into the Cuban government. It was a win-win for both sides, and that was why Trump, under the influence of Marco Rubio, canceled it.
Yeah. And we don't know then where it's going to go. I mean, even the guys who are already here, I wonder if they're worried, because, I mean, they get... This is U.S. money that they're making, somehow or another I could see them being tripped up even on their incomes.
Well, the Cuban baseball players...
If they continue as Cubans.
The Cuban baseball players were all in favor of the agreement, citing the difficulties they had to go through, and they said, well, this will, you know, make a professional agreement between the Major League Baseball and the Cuban Baseball Federation, and it's just, you know, a natural progression of how the two associations should deal with one another. But that was a positive step in the relationship between the United States and Cuba, and Trump, under Rubio's influence, was not going to allow that to happen.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, I hate to even realize to myself that Canada is, I heard, an independent country. We have a professional baseball team. It's not an American baseball team. It's actually, it's here in Canada. It's and so our laws, are we, you know, What do we do? Well, we have an asterisk in the Helms-Burton? Well, what are we?
Back in the 80s, the Blue Jays were one of the forerunners of scouting Latin players, including Cubans. And they were planning, under Paul Beeston, to bring up a number of Cuban players. And Major League Baseball stepped in and said, no, you can't get special dispensation just because you're a team from another country and not subject
we to... We could have fielded
a
Cuban team that would have beaten everyone.
We could have had a few more World Series wins in the 90s.
Yeah, Raul would have been in the crowd. They would have said, no, we don't like the optics.
But, you know, Canada has always abided by the extraterritorial aspects of American law against Cuba, even though our Canadian government will deny that. There was a number of cases where, for example, McDonald's Canada wanted to come into Cuba in the mid-90s, and they were forbidden by their head office in the United States, even though Canada McDonald's, you know, has to conform to Canadian law. Yes. But they were forbidden to come into Cuba because the American McDonald's said, no, it would be a violation of American laws that had nothing to do with Canadian laws, but that's the influence.
You know, just before you came in today, and it's Keith Bolander, I was reading this item from Elizabeth May. She was pointing out, you know, we need to go by international norms, UN. When the U.S. says, we have a law and you will not do this, that's got nothing to do with anything. That's really a kind of diplomatic, undiplomatic aggression. You know, where is international law? When I understand the Cubans have pointed out they have a law that you can't have Helms-Burton.
Right. When you own the world, though, you can do what you like.
Yeah, I'm afraid it kind of
sounds
like
that. It is so disappointing that the Canadian government supports the attempted coup in Venezuela. I think that's really, really disappointing that Trudeau's administration has followed the line of Trump, you know, saying Guaido is the legitimate president of Venezuela based on absolutely no
legal. We can determine that by our careful reading of their constitution.
Yeah.
And our attendance at their congressional meetings and party meetings.
It's just so disappointing that the Canadians are
actually
following.
It's getting uglier. And we have it's probably not just Chrystia Freeland, but she certainly fronts it very well as being very sycophantic, and they're in denial. They say, "Oh, the Lima Group, we're separate." You know, well, how come the Vice President Pence calls a meeting and the Lima Group shows up beside him in 24 hours? They say, "We're all going to meet in Colombia," and there's our foreign minister. You say, well, "Why would you be there?"
That's the power of the United States.
It's still
influence, and you know. So I don't know what
we need to write. You ought to write a book titled "Listen, Yankee." Do you remember that book? C. Wright Mills. You're old. You probably haven't heard of it. We have to tell Keith about C. Wright Mills.
I believe you mentioned it before. But I haven't read it yet. I'll have to get a copy.
I thought I was kidding. Okay. Listen, Yankee was a great title. He was, of course, a world-renowned sociologist who looked at Cuba and he thought, hey, there's a lesson here. Listen, Yankee. And all he did was produce their own words in answer to all the things that I said about them.
The Americans will never let the Cuban revolution have a moment's rest.
You know, revolutions are not forgiven. Haiti is still suffering because it dared to have a slave rebellion and create a black republic.
Yeah, very good point.
It must be punished eternally by the white guys that lost their slaves.
Yeah, and Trump is doing his best to ratchet up the aggression as much as he can.
It is really nasty. And again, it's Keith Bolander in the last minute here. Keith, we have two or one? We have two. Tell us, I'm excited to hear about this book. So what is your thesis? What are you saying to say there?
Well, the book is regarding how American corporate media, as well as international corporate media, has created these myths and misconceptions and sometimes outright falsehoods about the Cuban Revolution. And it goes back even before the revolution, back to Remember the Maine, when the Americans involved themselves in the Cuban attempts to overthrow the Spanish empire to relieve their colonial status. So using a number of examples in both back then, historical and current, the book tries to explain, you know, how corporate media has fallen so much in line with the state's objectives against Cuba. Yep. There was a tremendous amount of material to use. It was just this, you know, the how to select it.
I hope there's pictures, by the way. I love the I guess the thesis would be it's actually become worse, hasn't it? I mean, everybody talks about, we develop and we're more mature democracy. We seem to be less.
Well, it follows right up to the latest pronouncements of Trump, including the Helms-Burton. Who knows what's going to happen in the next month or two, but it is as current as possible. And it really doesn't matter which party is in power in the United States. The bipartisan perspective is regime change in Cuba, and the corporate media has, for the vast majority, followed that.
I'm really glad you made that point. I remember Bill Clinton in Miami saying, it's time to bring the hammer down on Cuba. Isn't that lovely? Bill Clinton. Anyway, we have Keith Bollinger. We're really glad you came, Keith, and we're looking forward to that book, Pluto Press. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM, and we also thank Tony Leoning. Of course, it's Mick looks after the whole business, and we appreciate it. And thanks again for all that dough that we raised, 100 grand, CIUT.FM.